We're just going to start with a brief introduction. So welcome to this Black Girl Podcast. I am one half of your Miss Lola, aka Lola.
And I am the other half of your co-host, the lovely, wonderful Miss Hildiva at The Hildiva on IG. And today we're coming at you with a very special guest. We're so happy to have Mr. Clement Dwyer with us. Can you introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Clement Dwyer, and I am so happy to be part of this awesome podcast. I'm looking forward to listening to you ladies and interacting and just connecting.
Wonderful.
Of course. Well, I would love for you to give our background, because just in full transparency, as we like to be, I personally know Clement. We had mostly a professional relationship. Essentially co-workers, we still stay connected. So thankfully, once this opportunity came for us to come together again, I jumped at the opportunity. He reciprocated. We love to see it. Let ourselves and the audience know exactly what is it that you do.
All right, my name is Clem Dwyer, and what I do is I am a public speaker coach. So what I do is I like to help people out learning how to not necessarily be a public speaker, but learn how to speak in public. So that's giving you the tools and techniques that you can acquire to help you in life, in business, and just to help you to, we all have confidence. It's just sometimes you need to unravel it. So with what I do is I help you to unravel that confidence and let it shine by giving you the confidence and tools that you need to be able to speak and share your voice.
I love that. So, okay. So how long have yourself speaking, doing like public speaking in general and or coaching?
7 years. So 7 years that I've actually officially have been helping people, mentoring and coaching, and to actually, but actually started opening up when I was teaching junior highs. So that's kind of where a lot of the background comes from, which is why it's easy for me to adapt to people want to change subjects. And because junior high kids, they don't stay on track. So if you can learn to deal with them, you can learn to deal with adults. So it's been seven strong years.
That's amazing. So teaching junior high, the way that must have been like an experience, because I can remember back to junior high and us kids, like I know that some teachers want to whip out their belts, I'm telling you that. So how did you cope with that, and like was that what kind of fueled you to go into public speaking, like seeing, you know, certain kids that couldn't do presentations? And you know, because I was one of those kids that I love doing presentations. Whenever there was presentation, like I'm like, good, I'm there the night before, have my stuff ready. And then some of my friends, like their knees are knocking, they're shaking, and they just hated that. You know, so what was that kind of what fueled you? And did you kind of notice that as well in children, that some were just like always really scared kind of thing?
Well, what it actually came from was just wanting to invest back in kids' lives. So a lot of kids I dealt with were inner city kids. So they grew up in the same neighborhoods I did, same family dynamics that I did. No one really gave them a chance. So when someone spent a lot of time investing in me when I was their age, and teaching me how to be authentic, how to have your voice, to be able to speak, because I did not like speaking at all. Like that, I could tell you that was my worst fear, was speaking in front of people. But when I could see that I could connect with young kids when everybody else was struggling, because I knew where they were coming from, I started to realize that that's important for them in their young developing life, to get the opportunity to have someone teach them, but also for me to also say, all right, now that you've seen what I can do, I want you to do the exact same thing. Because I want to be able to not just stand in front of you, but to give you those tools. And then to watch those kids grow up to even now where they're speaking. Some of them are teachers, some of them are pastors. And they're like, you know, if I hadn't invested in my life, I wouldn't have done this. That's what really spurred me to say that in this world, we need to be able to invest in our young people and get them on track. Because if not, Lord knows where they're going to be. And as Black men, you're either dead or in prison. Like, there's really not many options if you're not direct on the right track. So that was my goal, to speak to those kids and in poor life and add value to them.
Amen.
Because I was going to say that, like, in terms of, because you touched on confidence and trying to kind of build that confidence. Because even when I was younger, I was so shy when I had to, like, go to the front of the class because I was nervous, like, am I going to forget this? Am I going to do whatever? And with time, I eventually kind of grew out of it, but I still felt a lot of those type of inklings when it came to things like work interviews and job interviews, where you're sitting in a room and literally people are there to judge you, and you're just like, you know, you have the like, you know, you're capable, you know, you're knowledgeable, you know that you've done the job like 10 different, but for some reason when it's this panel of people versus you, it's kind of hard for people to really kind of step out of themselves and blossom to properly, I guess, I don't want to say sell yourself, but show people who you truly are without having to, like, I guess, warm up to people, because that's what people tend to do. So I want to ask you, essentially, for, I guess, with demonstrating that confidence, just in general in life, not necessarily with just public speaking, because I'm sure building that confidence and that type of skill can be definitely applied through many, whether it's, you know, family gatherings, whether it's dating, whether like for work and things like that. I guess my question is, what would be your best tip to start to step out of, I guess, that
into confidence?
Well, the number one thing that I learned is don't magnify your weakness. That will hold you back, is when you keep saying, I can't do it, I can't do it. Everyone's going to look at me. If I speak, I'm going to fall apart. Sometimes it's in our head, and I've heard that a million times, and I always tell people, nope, it's not in my head, it's legit. They're like, no, it is, it's actually true. But if you keep focusing on the fact that you're going to fail, then you're going to fail. If you look at someone and say, speak to you, it's having the tools and the technique. And when you don't have the proper tools, then you don't feel you can do the job. It's anywhere in life. If you go to work and the person says, I want you to type up this report, but there's no computer there, but they're hounding you, I need to have the report. Well, if you give me the tools and I can do the reports, You can't fire me, you can't threaten me to do anything because I don't have the tools. Once you have the tools and technique and you learn to work with it and you can see that it works and you can have people who give you positive feedback, that helps you so much. And that's what my job is, to say, Leanne, guess what? I know you're scared of talking in front of people. I guess you can't stand 1,000 people. Here's 2 or 3 things that you can do that's going to help you. And we're going to practice on it. We're going to practice on it. And you'll get the constructive feedback. You'll get the opportunities to do it. Once you have the technique and the encouragement, then whatever room you step into, it's wash, rinse, and repeat. Tools, technique. And when you're done, you have to be able to praise yourself. That's, sometimes we are our hardest critic. Sometimes we need to be our biggest cheerleader. If you can walk room and go, I knocked it out of the park. You may have not liked it, but I know I gave the best that I could and be able to walk away from that.
Amen.
I definitely can feel that. I've had those moments where I knew I walked out of a room and I was like, I did that, all of it, every single bit. You know? Yeah. So I can definitely relate, but it's just like, it's just so interesting to know that something that a lot of people internalize and I guess consider it like a personal fault is also something that they can kind of work out like a muscle to grow and improve. Just because, I don't know, I feel like certain, when people are self-conscious or has nervousness or lack of confidence in whatever fault, issue, mistake, mishap, whatever their faults may be, because I know you said to just obviously don't amplify it, but like, what other ways can somebody kind of, I guess, build their confidence? Just because, like, I have friends Hildiva knows this particular friend. I'm not going to say no names, but she's a bit of a shrinking violet in the sense that, like, she doesn't like to be the center of attention, and she tends to put a lot of her thought process into, I'm not that important. Oh, well, no, the focus doesn't have to be on me, or I don't mind being in the background. And I've always kind of tried to encourage, like, you can, that's fine, but you can also do more than that. Like, don't just settle for that as being your option. That shouldn't be your plan A. So, like, what else could you suggest other than, being somebody's cheerleader when you see, like, one of those, like, shrinking, you know, those shrinking flower types?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Leanne. I have a friend who's the same way, and she'll start a project, and she's like, well, I'm not too sure. And I did the encouraging part, and then I stopped and went, you know something, you need to stop this. Like, I just got firm. I said, you really need to stop this, because you are destroying the dream that God's given you. This is a slap in the face. You have such a strong voice. You have such a great gift. And you keep doing this to yourself. When you keep telling yourself you can't do it, you are missing out on opportunities. And I start asking, where do you want to be in life? What do you want to do? What's your goal? And then had her thinking it through. And that became it. Instead of keeping saying, oh, that's great, that's nice, it was too soft for her. What she needed to hear was, listen, you have what it takes. I'm going to walk with you every step of the way. This is what we are going to do, and keep her accountable. Every now and then I'll pop up and say, how's your charity event going? I'm like, no, we agree. We're going to keep ourselves accountable. Sometimes you have to be that friend who has to look at me and say, okay, guess what? We have two options. Either A, we go through this, or you stop bringing this up. Because I'm not going to sit here and have you keep telling me, I can't. After a while, it becomes bothersome to me. Stop it. It was the kind of shock that went, Clem, I said, I'm your biggest cheerleader, but I will not sit here and have you throw water on your own dreams and me sit on the sideline and think that's all right. Then don't tell me, and then we'll all be good. That's when she stopped. And it was like, oh, wow, you're serious. I said, it's your dream. But I don't have to sit here and listen to it. So we need to make a decision here. That's what you almost need to do, is almost persuade that person to make a choice. Do you want to go forward, or do you want to stay? Let me know, so I know how to be that person in that room. So I can't force you to do anything you don't want to do.
Right.
I will always encourage you, but I can't sit here and watch you keep talking. You can't do it. You don't want to do it. You can. Just let me help you. Or we won't do it. Either way, I'm still going to be here.
And that's the thing, too, I was going to ask. That kind of does span off that topic. But have you ever dealt with someone who, for example, had like a speech impediment, or, you know, stuttering or something like that, that just needed confidence to overcome a different kind of disability, or, you know, and how would you help someone work through that?
I am the poster child for a speech impediment, because that was me growing up. Yeah, that was me growing up.
Yes, wow.
I have the quick story is grade 3, we had speech presentations, and the teacher said we're going to have it. And literally, I went ghost white, and I'm black. So if you're black, went ghost white, you know there's a problem. Fear. I couldn't sit in front of people because I was afraid that when they looked at me, they were going to judge me, they were going to criticize, they were going to laugh. I felt that my voice meant nothing. It took someone who was a mentor, who was like, I call him my father right now. He looked at me and said, we will no longer hear excuses, and stood beside me as he put me in position where I had to overcome it. It took that click to say, hey, I believe in you. If nobody else does, and you're in a room, focus on me. You keep your eyes on me, you know we're going in the right direction. And that's where it turned out. And that's why I went to junior high, and I kept making excuses, telling kids, you know, I got speech impediment. That's why I said, don't magnify your weakness, because those kids start coming up to me saying, Clem, you keep telling us you stutter. Oh, we've never heard you stutter. So is this a life lesson you're teaching us? Is this a joke? Like, why do you keep saying this?
Right.
I had to learn steps and just how to slow down what I was going to say. I don't use four-syllable words because sometimes it doesn't roll off my tongue. There are techniques, and it's how you introduce yourself to people. And the one technique that I teach people is if you walk into a room with strangers, turn them into your friends.
Love it.
You don't have a problem talking in front of your friends. It's you have a problem talking in front of people you don't know. Once you get to know two or three people, all of a sudden that fear starts to drop because we're no longer strangers. And it's just finding the rhythm and the words and just being able to slow down and pause. And I tell people, no one knows your speech. So if you pause, then pause. If you do it right, it's a dramatic pause. They're going, oh, he's revving up for something. They don't know you've forgotten something. They just think that you're preparing for something new.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So this, it's funny because talking about speech impediment, like I'm surprised because like I said, when I first met you, I was just like, this is like a really well-spoken, confident Black man. Like, I love this. I love everything about this person, the aura, the everything. But my question for you now is in terms of, because we've talked about, you know, confidence in friendships. We talked about confidence as a child, growing up to an adult.
Yeah.
Now, my question is very specific in terms of a lot of times, especially in corporate spaces, you tend to be the only token or, you know, the standout person of color. Maybe there might be another one. Like in our personal space, for that small number, I was very impressed with the amount of like range and diversity. I was like living, you know? But not everybody's like that. Not every corporate space is like that. And I definitely felt the pressure to not only perform, but also remember that like I'm here because I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And how do you kind of, I guess, remind yourself as a person and as a, specifically a Black person that like you're like, because it's hard with politics and everything to feel like, am I here because I'm the token? Am I here because I'm good? Because I've definitely felt issues. I've been slighted, you know, due to the unfortunate levels of melanin in my skin. Mm-hmm. Where you've seen people who look a lot different from you get farther doing absolutely nothing. So it's like, how do you build up that confidence when you're in a workspace, you know, it's essentially your livelihood. Like, how do you have the confidence to be like, you know what, what's happening here is not good enough. It's not to my standard. And how do you either work it up to either address it as to like HR or to like an executive person to say like, this isn't okay, or, you know, I deserve a better raise, or, you know, how come this person who's doing less than me is getting paid more than me? Like, to be able to kind of have those confidence to address those hard questions in a corporate setting.
Wow, that's a loaded question.
I know.
Diversity inclusion being the sexy beast right now, because diversity was not on the topic until George Floyd. Like, I can tell you, right? No one spoke about it. And as soon as that happened, everyone in corporate started talking, oh, we're doing diversity inclusion. We're like, well, where was that 60 years ago? This isn't anything.
Yeah, thank you.
Don't make it
We've
sound
been good. Here.
Don't
right?
You just discovered something new. It should have been in place. Mm-hmm. Most of the time of every job I've had, I've been the only Black man.
Yeah.
Well, very few have I've ever met. The job I have now, I think it's like three of us. Well, there's two of us now because one guy left. But the first thing I realized is I have to dress at a different standard. Like, that's the first thing. Because when I walk through the door, that's the first thing they see about me is what I look like. Before I utter any word out of my mouth, they look and they assume. But if I dress better than them, then that's one thing off the table. Mm-hmm. So now I have to think about something else. If I come in there with where I speak, and we'll talk about code switching back and forth, but just the fact of how I present myself, how I'm friendly, how when I get upset, you don't see me throwing patois and dashing things off the floor. I don't do that. How do I speak to customers? Then that's when the walls start coming down, because unfortunately media puts the umbrella, this is what a Black man or a Black woman should be. And like, no, I'm not going to be painted by that brush. And I've gone up to Black people and said, listen, I'm going to tell you one thing. There's two of us in here. Don't embarrass me.
Say it to them.
If you do something bad, they come on me. And if I get rained on, you and I are going to have issues. Not the white person, you. Because we need to stand together and realize we are one, whether we like it or not. And funny enough, that was what my partner did, is we both came in dressing like we were the managers. We dressed better than our managers. People would look and go, well, why are you dressing? I said, if you're a Black man, you'd understand. Because I have to. So when we walk into a room, how do I present myself? I never stood behind HR going to defend me. HR is mostly going to be someone who's white, so they're not going to understand what I'm going through.
Right.
HR, with 99% of you are going to be white. I'm not going to be able to, I don't look to them to do anything. I look to be able to take my battle straight to my boss in a polite and dignified manner, because they're expecting me to go off and become Samuel L. Jackson and start cursing and stuff. That's not who I am. But I can speak to you in a mature manner. I can speak to you with confidence if I know something is going wrong. And I have no issues talking to that person. It's only happened once in my life that I went off on someone who was senior, because it affected my job. And that's when the entire workplace got scared, because they've never seen me in 14 years raise my voice.
Right.
So you have a reputation of someone who's calm and respectful. When I do raise my voice, they're like, okay, someone's done something to upset Clem.
Right.
It wasn't Clem's upset because he can't figure something out. It's someone has caused this, because he's not this. And it's a battle, it's a pattern. It's not the greatest thing, unfortunately, but that's the battle. I have to walk in there going, you're going to look to try to poke the bear. I know this is what you're going to do with your funny jokes, with your microaggression. I get it. We're going to play this game, and I'm going to play it better than you, because you will not get me upset. That's when it started. And the respect, I had people defending me that I didn't even know I was being attacked behind my back. That's what you have to be able to do. And it's allies. If I treat you with respect for a long period of time, you're going to feel guilty if you're going to try to stab me in the back. It's just difficult for most people to do it.
And one thing about that too, it's like with jobs and stuff, like HR is there for the business. It's to defend the business. You know what I mean? So a lot of times you want to raise, you go to HR. HR is like, I have the budget, or, you know, it's not in our books. We can't like HR is just there to defend the business against any attacks, really, instead of you. We're taught as employees that HR is there for us, but no, it's their back pocket. HR is the ears to the ground for the business, so they know what I want. Okay. Let's be real here. And it's funny because even talking about, you know, when you go to a job and presenting yourself nicely and stuff like that, for me, it's always the, like, I would always dress nice and like that. Excuse me. But I've always had a funny relationship with my name. Okay. So my birth name is Hilda. And I'm Hilda the Diva, so Hil Diva, okay? Now y'all know the birth of the name Hil Diva. But my sisters all have these beautiful, exotic names, okay? But I got my two grandmother's names as my first and middle name, Hilda, and then my middle name, which is another granny name, okay? So I used to hate it so much. I'm like, oh my gosh, my sister's got like this nice name, that nice name, all these nice exotic names. And I get freaking Hilda, like I sound like some granny. But when it came time to have an interview, they're coming in the interview room, looking at everyone, all the candidates, and they're looking for Hilda. And they're walking past me left, right, Hilda, Hilda, Hilda. I'm like, I'm right here. And they see me, my Black backside. One man actually said to my face, you're Hilda? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I was looking for a tall Dutch girl. I was like, oh my God. But I'm like, thank God, because that name gets my resume looked at. And then when I show up professional, dressed better than them, and they see me speaking that slapping down them that Webster's dictionary on them backside, then they, you know what I mean? I always get the job. Like, I never went to an interview I didn't get, you know? So it's just funny that, you know, it definitely is about the way you carry yourself. You have to it's kind of sad that we can't just be regular, schmegular. Yeah. You know what I mean? Right. We got to overshoot to get our shot, you know? So.
Right. Definitely. No, just when you said like the overshot, it hit me. It hit me a lot harder than I expected to. Because like a lot of sayings say that a lot of Black people have to work twice as hard to get half as far. Mm-hmm. And I deeply resent it. I deeply resent it because like I will be in an office setting of some sort and I'll see somebody coming in having like, you know, executive hours without the executive position or the executive position without doing any executive work. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it was just sad. It made me sad because it was like, you know, this opportunity could have been given to somebody who could be doing so much more with it, could be taking the company so much farther, expanding things, but because you want to keep a certain social circle or you're worried about what the face of this department's going to look like, you're allowing somebody to run a department who doesn't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm gonna say something, I'm gonna watch both your eyes because I already know your eyes gonna pop out of your head. I had met somebody who was an executive. Like when I say executive, like not C-level, but definitely B-level, who over the span of 2 years had not contributed a single report. A single quarterly report.
Wow.
Like the closest thing that came to a financial report was literally a one-page basic Excel sheet.
Wow.
That showed like balances and charges, like something you'd learn in grade 9 accounting.
Stop it. Stop. I'm done. And getting paid 6 figures, wasn't he?
Yep.
Cool. Yeah. I'm done, see? Yeah.
It's on the joke was, they weren't even doing those reports. It was somebody else in a junior position.
No.
So they weren't doing the reports at all.
And I wish I could say I'm surprised, you know? And I don't even want to ask you if this person's a minority because a minority couldn't even get away with
of course that not.
For a week, never mind 2 years.
Of course not. Of course not. Like, literally, I've seen corporate companies pick somebody with less experience and less background over a seasoned veteran with over a decade of experience because of what she looked like.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, actually, what they like, despite having great rapport, great customer feedback, experience, education, knowledge, they picked somebody else because they looked the part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they didn't know jack nothing.
Wow.
What companies are really report to is their shareholders. And if their shareholders are all white men in their 60s or 70s, then of course they want to see someone who's white. I mean, it just makes sense. They see someone who's black and they kind of go, where is this coming? Or someone who's Chinese. Or even if they see, if they're all men and they see a woman up there, they kind of go, how does this person get this position? Then they start judging. So when someone comes in who can looks like the face of the franchise, if you know it,
Well, I want to ask, where is that disconnect then for people to look at somebody else and instantly have no confidence in their abilities without knowing them? Like, where can you say as a professional who teaches about, like, you know, speaking and having confidence, like, where does that disconnect come from?
It's just ignorance. I mean, really, it comes down from ignorance and the way that you're taught in business. And that is, if you see an apple tree, you're pretty sure as an apple seed is where it first started. You don't plant an apple seed and get an orange. It just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So if that seed is planted, that these are the certain people that are supposed to be C-level, then yes, then that's the generation. And until the company decides to stop and make a change, and unfortunately, the only way that happens is that whole shareholder staff has to retire or all die. And you have to put a whole new crop of fresh-minded, but it won't, because that junior executive is watching how the seniors act, and that's who's teaching them. So when they become senior, yeah, guess what? That's all they know. So someone has to make it. No one wants to make that change because it's going to shock the company. What will it do with, because again, if shareholders don't get what they want or don't see what they want and they pull the plug, no one has any jobs. So.
Right. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, yeah. So I was going to ask, this is going to be an off topic.
Yeah.
Just a question about the world, okay? Because we touched on George Floyd, we've touched on, you know, biases and stuff like that when it comes to hiring and things like that. Let's talk about something a little recent.
Okay.
You know, that in London, Ontario, that family that recently was literally plowed into with this vehicle. Like, I am so upset about this happening, because so Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP party, is he the leader right now or whatever he is?
Yeah.
He's like low-key my boo. He's been my like secret boo for like years. Okay. I'm telling you, nobody knows. He has no idea, but he's my secret bae in my head for like over a decade now, since before he had grays. Okay. He looks better with the grays. Okay. Side note. But he gave a speech in Parliament that was apparently very fiery. He expressed anger, like he just put down his politician cap and just put on that real-ish cap, okay? And he told it like it is. And he did claim, like, you know, Canada is a racist country. You know, he said a lot of jarring things, okay?
A lot of things that we sweep under the rug and pretend that isn't there.
Right. A lot of just very blunt rhetoric, okay? And when I first heard it, it gave me a negative, like a negative chemical went through my body, like, ooh, you know? But then I thought about it and I said, the reality is, yes, racism is everywhere. You know, like, how can we keep operating this way? You know? And a lot of people, like, I was watching the Twitter feed and a lot of people were like, you know, he's playing a dangerous game and, you know, he's talking like this. How is Canada a racist country? And it's like, for me, I'm shocked. Like, what do you feel about that whole issue? You know, when you heard about it, what was your reaction? I do have a reaction as well, but I want to hear from you too as well first.
The only thing I will say is I don't understand how people can question Canada as a country being racist after literally just last week we found over 200 Indigenous children's bodies in the ground. Like, I just, like, I don't understand how people can be like, who? And have a question mark when, like, things that we've known to be an occurrence and we've known to happen are still happening. You know, there are systematically racist structures and practices that are happening in the city of Toronto. Like, a lot of people talk about this one restaurant called Cactus Club, where if you are a little too melanated, half the time they don't let you in unless you're dressed in a super specific type of way. You know, they don't hire certain colors to work there. Like, they have this whole code of things like that. Like, I've heard a lot of stories come out of there, but they're not the only place, and there's a lot of people on the street if you have interactions or whatnot where, you know, they're completely disrespectful. Like, I remember myself personally, when I was younger, I was downtown, I had interacted with a homeless man who was begging for spare change to buy a coffee. I didn't have the spare change. I literally just had bus fare to go home. And so I said to him, I'm like, I don't have any money, but I have a roll up the rim of free coffee. Why don't you just take that? He's like, oh, I'd rather have the money. And I'm like, well, I don't have it. You said you wanted a coffee. I'm giving you a method to get coffee. And he's just like, oh, well, you know, F off you. And I was like,
A homeless man?
Okay, well, you can thirst then. Like, I'm gonna take my free coffee and keep moving. Like,
right.
But yeah, but it's just like, it's just the audacity, the capacity.
Let me stop for a second. I'm sorry.
You know?
No, girl, we have to pause there because, are you kidding me? A homeless person calling me an N. I'm saying the old me would have felt so insulted, but yo, the me right now, I'd kick him in his teeth, yo. I'm not kidding. I am sorry. I do not condone violence, but I am kicking a mofo in their teeth. How dare you? If he even has any, okay? You're homeless, nothing. Someone's trying to give you something. You could call me an N-word? What? Yo, keep going.
Trust me. I was surprised by the audacity, and literally, like, when he said that to me, I was just like, okay, well, I'm gonna go to my home now. You enjoy the streets. I like walk to the bus stop without the bus because, like, what else is there?
The homeless. I can't deal with it.
I'm not about to argue with somebody who's on the streets, probably having like mental health issues, drug issues, whatever issues. And so because they're mad that I didn't have extra money for them to go buy like crack or something, call me a nigger. Like,
so true. And then that's how I know I would have been petty Betty at that moment. Like, why am I beating up a freaking homeless person? I need to stop. I know I'm CP24. So people know I would not kick him in his teeth. I would probably just punch a pole beside him instead, okay? Glennon, let us hear you. What would you do in these situations? My goodness, what do you...
So much happened just in the last year, just in my life. I have noticed that I'm not even surprised anymore. I'm disappointed, but I'm no longer surprised. It's almost like I expect this nonsense to happen. And it's true. People don't think of Canada as a racist country compared to the United States, because that's who we're very much close to. That's who we neighbor. If you go to Europe and stuff, they're very racist, but you're not going to hear it unless you're there. So we get our reports from what happens in the US. Canada, we're very polite, we're calm, it gets swept under the rugs until something like this where 215 bodies are found. And people are going, I don't understand how this happened. And the rest of us are going, don't know how you don't know that this could have happened. Like, it should be, but it shouldn't be a shock to you. So when I hear people come up there and insult me and say stuff, I've learned to, and people have said this, say, Clem, does really anything faze you? I'm like, here's one thing. I'm not gonna let you find what my button that pushes, because if I do, then you'll know what keeps pushing. So I've learned to respond back. And the way Leanna responded, well, I say, well, if you don't want it, you can stay here home on the street, and I'm going to go back to my home, and my home has fresh water, and I have coffee.
And I'm going to go home and bathe.
These are the things where I kind of sit there and go, you're going to insult me, but you don't realize how ignorant you sound right now. Mm-hmm. And I realize that has been my defense, is to tell people, if you want to be ignorant, okay, then we'll walk down the hall ignorant. But when we're done, understand what I have and what you don't have. So figure out what we're going to fight over. And there's times where I've stayed silent, and I've joked about people about the size of my ears. Like, they're small.
And I've had people,
I've had people and my trademark is I'm sitting there, I'm nodding, and then I'll go, oh, sorry, I didn't hear what you said. I had small ears. And these ears God gave me is a filter. I can only see so much, and you've maxed out what you had to say. So I didn't hear a single word. This face of anger. I'm sitting there smiling, going, "Are we done?" I was a long time ago. It's how you respond to situations, because the people are just ready to find ways to say, "Oh, black people are this way." No, you're forgetting. If a bear won't touch you until you poke the bear. Fault that it attacked you, or is it your fault that you attacked the bear?
Right.
No one sees the person who started the fight. They only see you who threw the punch back in response. Mm-hmm. And I learned that by playing sports. The referee never sees the person who pushes you first. They see the person who retaliated.
Always.
Always. That rule, I said, all right, I got a chance to walk away. And they can sit there and go, well, you're a coward. Maybe so, but I'm not getting thrown out of the game for this.
Exactly. And,
life is a game that goes on, and I don't want to have my name rubbed because you want to be ignorant about this. There's times to fight, but there's times where you got to sit back and go, is it worth it? Or are you just saying, yeah, you're an idiot. I mean, that's the bottom line is I'm not going to play in the dirt with the mud.
And that's the thing. Like, I was going to quickly say, like, that's what irks me about this whole London situation, because people are giving so much backlash, to Jagmeet Singh about, you know, the way he was angry and the stuff he's saying. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You are more upset that has the bravery to stand and stand up to racism, injustice, and complete outright just derogatory behavior, murder. It's a massacre.
It's a massacre, yeah.
You're more like, direct that energy to the people that are killing, plowing innocent Canadians, innocent, even if they're not Canadian, plowing down innocent people. Direct that energy where it should be going. But you're mad at people reacting to murder of innocent people. Like, it's so disgusting and it's so elitist to me. People who think they are elite and think that they're better than others, they'll be so mad at you. How dare you stand up to injustice? Like, just sit and take it like everybody else, and your injustice should not jeopardize me. It doesn't affect me, so, you know, we'll be mad at you. No, be injustice. Take all that energy, take all that smoke, and direct it at the person starting fires. How about that?
Well, it's funny because, like, a lot of people, and when I say a lot of people, I usually mean a lot of white people, they have this weird thing that, like, let's say that there's an altercation or an exchange, and it's, you know, like, let's say it's between a white person and an Asian person, and then a black person or a Southeast Asian person steps in to help and or defend that Asian person, they're almost like shocked. Like, how are you defending him? He doesn't look like you. Or why are you defending him? He doesn't look like you. Like, I saw a really disgusting video earlier today before Jagmeet Singh made his statement, in fact, of what perceived to be a white man looking out his window and seeing another South Asian family just walking on the sidewalk, and a truck drove by and he started yelling, "Ah, you missed." And I'm like, what's wrong with you? Like, literally, these are people just walking down the street, living, like, existing. They're not doing anything to you. They didn't rob you. They didn't take your job. They didn't fuck your wife. They're not married to your children. They, like, literally, these people are just existing in the world. And for you to make such a tasteless comment, like, if that was your family and somebody was ridiculing them, you would want to punch their teeth out. So why can't you have, even if you don't relate to somebody who doesn't look like you, why can't you at least have compassion for what has happened?
Right.
Because that's the one thing I'll never understand for certain people, and for, like, and when people make ignorant statements, it's like, how, like, when people say, like, oh, well, how can you get along with somebody different from you? It's like, because I have compassion. I can relate to somebody else. They don't have to look exactly like me, be a mirror, same height, same, like, I, like, just existing. We relate already.
It's called
just
by human compassion. Like, it's basic human decency. Like, is that so basic at all? Like, if no one has that, like, how is it common? You know, common sense, it seems not to be so common. You know what I mean? It's one of those.
You know what the hard thing about is we live in a world where there aren't repercussions for me verbally saying something. There isn't. So if I insult, what's the worst that can happen? I'm not going to. Are we in?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, what were you saying before?
Yeah, so it has to do with repercussions. So can you hear me? So hear me?
Yep.
Okay, great. Yep. Yeah, repercussion. We know that if I get caught, I'm speeding, the repercussions, I get a ticket or I lose my license, suspension. If there aren't any repercussions, we'd be racing 200 miles an hour down the street, no problem. Do I fear about hitting someone? Sure, it might happen, but nothing bad is going to happen to me. What's the worst that can happen? So we don't have laws that sit there. We like to call it assault if I insult you, but no one's going to jail because I said something to you. Like, no one's going to lose. Your house will not be taken away from you. So when I hear people who throw words, they don't realize your words are just as powerful as if you took a weapon and physically hurt somebody. You are doing damage. It's just there's nothing that people are doing. So when people know this, we go as close to the wall. If you have kids, kids will push that envelope until they realize, oh, I can't do that. But if you haven't stopped them from going to point one, they'll go to step two. They'll go to step 50 until something stops them. And yeah, they're going, keep going, and keep going. And the hard thing is I keep telling people, when you push someone far enough and they react, they won't respond the same way you started it. So your words may have hurt them. They may take a weapon and kill you. That could be the end result, penting up of the fears. So when you hear things of Jandeep going off, this isn't because this hasn't happened before. This kind of nonsense happened for years and it needs to stop. And
Absolutely. Now, the one thing I wanted to touch on before we all leave each other is one thing that definitely kind of carried across in my life, and I feel like has helped me professionally, but has felt perhaps a bit of a hindrance socially, culturally. And we talked about briefly code switching, but growing up in school, because I guess I was the more well-spoken Black girl, and I didn't always know all the hip-hop lyrics, Black girl, and you know, I didn't follow the you know, the hood trends, Black girl, I was definitely called, you know, a lot of times the Oreo, definitely being called whitewash. And I want to ask both of you, like, how, if that was the case, like, did it apply to you, and how did you kind of build that confidence to kind of step out of it and be like, you know what, I'm well spoken and what, I'm employable, bitch. Like,
you know what the funny thing is? Here's the thing. I did not hear about code switching until last year when we had diversity at our workplace. I had always spoken this way. Like, all my friends have spoken this way. We grew up in our neighborhood speaking this way. The only time we threw patois was when we hung around like an older brother or a cousin or an uncle or something like that, and we did it for fun. But in general, everybody spoke with perfect degree diction. Nobody, so we didn't know what code switching was. So I've never heard anybody say, well, you're whitewashing your Oreo. It was kind of, no one ever came up to me and said, oh, you're well spoken. It could have been the neighborhood I grew up, which was mostly all Black. I don't know. But even coming to college and university and stuff, never heard it until a year ago. And I laughed and I said, you know what the funny thing is? I speak English like everybody else does. This is how I speak. How did you think I was supposed to speak? That's what concerns me, is what did you think I was supposed to
speak? Right.
This is normal for me. If it's not normal for you, then you have the problem.
That's so funny. For me, growing up, a lot of my friends were white growing up. So I was always used to being the only Black chick, right? So, but my sisters, I went to a different school than my older sisters. They all went to like English school. I went to French school. Oh. So I remember coming home one day and my own sister, and I have one sister that is half German, so she's half white and she's mixed, right? So she goes to me, you are more white on your inside than I am on my outside. And I remember, like, what? And she said it again. She's like, and then she was calling me an Oreo, telling me I'm whitewashed. Wow. But I didn't understand what the hell she meant. I didn't get it because I'm just like, what the hell does it mean to be white? What does it mean to be black? You know what I mean? So when I thought about it, I realized, you know, later on, I realized it was the way that I talked. It was the way that I behaved. But I never really felt insulted by it because I'm like, I felt more sad for the person saying it, because for you to categorize black people as some sort of lesser education, lesser eloquence, lesser than, that reflects more on you, kind of like what you were saying, Clem, because I felt very much growing up, like I've even had girlfriends low-key challenge my blackness, you know, like, you know, like I remember having a friend say something like, you know, I can't remember exactly what she said, but at the end of whatever she said, I understood her saying like, you know, well, you're black, but you sound white or so, whatever the hell she said. But I said to her, my first thing I said to her, well, yeah, I feel completely like a black woman. Like at the end of the day, my skin is black. No matter what I do, I'm a black woman. But since you're asking, I can wind up like a black girl. I cook like a black woman. Eat my Caribbean food. I can braid hair. I dance my bati. I listen to my soca music. I go home to a black family. My family, my mother has an accent and I can understand her. We speak Patois. We literally speak a Creole language that only black people in St. Lucia speak. So I feel more black than ever that I could ever feel, but I can just get a damn good job while I'm at it. So I don't understand. You know what I mean? So if me speaking eloquently, or, you know, not rolling my R's or whatever the hell, talking out and blah, 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 makes me not black, then what makes me black? Like, I challenge you to tell me what being black is, if that's what it is to you. If being white is certain way, what is being black, you know?
Right. Because I dealt with it a lot, kind of like exiting elementary school, but definitely going into high school, just because I had the same instance of, you know, a majority of my friends being white. And there was like a group of like black kids who, I guess because maybe I didn't show too much interest. I was just like that kind of girl that like lived and let live. And so I don't know what their issue was with me personally, but like they resented the fact that like I was well-spoken, that I was bilingual, that like, certain, and or that like, you know, I was hanging out with certain white circles or some of the popular kids or whatever, and so they would try and bully me and say like, oh, you're so whitewashed, you're just nothing but an Oreo, like you want to be white so bad. And I'm like, at one point I got fed up and I was just like, look, I'd rather be, you know, whitewashed than black trash. Like, like if that is what it be, like, I'd rather be that, because y'all are doing too much. Like, nobody's harassing me but you.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like, just say you want to be my friend. Like, just keep it up. You know? So, but it was just like, it definitely made me feel a little, I don't want to say it made me feel a little less black, or that like the black part or whatever, but I felt a little bit more dissociated from my blackness because I didn't have very many black friends growing up, and my family, especially my mom, tried really hard to keep us in an assimilated bubble of like, we're in Canada, this is what the Canadians do, you know, I have to do that, like, you know, just how to be proper and all of that stuff. And like, so like growing up, I grew up learning and knowing more about like English and British culture than Jamaican culture, which sounds really ridiculous because like right, like now I have like a great balance and like I'm happy for it, I appreciate it. It's funny because like now because I did a whole like ancestry DNA test and stuff like that, and I found out like part of my family's really white, you know. And so I'm just like, okay, so knowing about that side of my family, like it doesn't take away from my blackness, but it also is part of my culture. So it's like, which, you know, at the end of the day still makes me a black woman. Like having that British Englishness about me doesn't invalidate my blackness.
Right.
You know, bring up a lot of those kids trying to do.
both you ladies nailed it. Black people have, and I'm pretty sure it has to do with generational, of how you would hate yourself just to make yourself feel better. And when you use the terminology, you're whitewashed, it makes you have just devalued yourself by saying you want to be someone that you're not. I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, you're black, you shouldn't speak white. That doesn't make any sense. I don't know where you're going with this. That right there is when black people as a society will never advance if we keep trying to tear each other down by making foolish statements that say we're here and the white person is here. So we don't want to be up here because that means I have to sell out. What do you mean you have to sell out? No, just go to school like the white person did. Learn math like the white person. Remember what the white person did.
Yeah, it's like they forget that it's like we're not fighting for a hierarchy. They're not. It's not a matter of hierarchy where white people are at one level and we're below. It's fighting for equality.
Equality.
Where we're all on the same field and therefore treated and respected the same way. Because nobody aside from the term hick or redneck. When white people have different accents, I guess now like the black scent, now when you see like white people and Asian people appropriating like AABE and stuff like that, like you hear about people saying like, oh, you need to talk like a Caucasian, why are you talking like a blackie? Or like, you know, like nobody says that. Nobody says that despite the different accents and regions and stuff that everybody has. But and it's like, it's weird to think that like you know, I guess for people of color, like there's an Asian way to talk or Asian accent, there's a South Asian accent, things like that, there's a black accent, you know, whether it's African American or just African. But like, there's no accent for white people. So when people are like, oh, you're talking white, I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. Like, there's no accent for them.
My question, you know, like,
make it make sense.
So I'm going to kind of sum it up a bit with respect to what Clement does. I have a question for parents who have kids. Let's say my child's bullied at school, you know, for having an accent. And or just has no confidence. Like what would you say to a parent who wants to, you know, nurture their child to be confident and be able to speak up for themselves when they need to? What would you suggest for, you know, some things that parents could keep in mind when dealing with their kids? I know that's kind of into parenting, but that's also like, if I know that I want them to end up on that right path and be confident and, you know, a nice, strong individual, do you have any tips for that when dealing with kids?
You know what? Well, you know what helps is organized events, and whether it's organized sports or whether it's putting them in an after-school program outside of their own schoolmates. Because what happens is the people that they're at school with are familiar with them and know what upsets them, how to pick on them. If you're in a group and everybody is new, you tend not to want to be the person who's the bully. You want to tend to get as many possible. So if I'm trying to get three friends and you're trying to get three friends, we're all going to be friends. There has to be a part where that parent continuously always has to pour into that child, knowing that child has a low self-esteem. So take the child out, invest in the child, spend time with that child, let the child know that, hey, you don't have an accent, you speak perfectly fine, because there are millions of people who have the exact same accent that child has. They're just not good. So you're not the only person who speaks with an accent. We all do. It's how I hear your voice. If I listen carefully, I might go, you know, Hilda, you have an accent. No, it's just certain words that you say because you have Creole in you. You have St. Louis, so you have French. So certain words, like my wife is French. So certain words she'll say that I can hear her French accent comes out. She's not trying to be different. She hears the word. So when she hears it, goes, well, you have an accent because you didn't say bonjour. I say bonjour. Well, you don't say that. we can make all kinds of jabs at someone's accent, where we should be praised for that.
Exactly.
Embrace. And that's going to take a lot, depending on how the child is to be put in an orbit, in a place where that child is not being ostracized. Mm-hmm. And it takes time. It's going to take time, and hopefully through development and being that program, the child will realize that their accent, no one hears it. They just hear voice, you know, and right. Don't allude to it. Don't have to highlight it. The child knows the accent. In 10 years, I'll be there.
Right. It's funny because the first time my middle child heard his own voice recorded, he was like, what? The guy got so mad, he started crying. Yes. He hated his voice. I'm like, honey, we all hate how we sound. I'm like, when mommy heard her voice, that's not me. I'm like, that is not me. That's not what I hear in my head. But you're hearing it from inside your skull versus outside of your mouth, you know? So it's like, baby, it's going to sound different. That child, he had to do a virtual video project for school, and he did not want me sending that thing in. But he finally manned up, and we emailed it to the teacher. It was so funny, but,
so
you know, that's kids.
And they don't have a very white voice, and they're gonna be like, what's this?
Well, it's starting to get late into the evening, so we'll wrap this up. I want to deeply, deeply, deeply thank you, Clement, for joining us, for giving us different tips, knowledge, inspiration. And if people want to connect with you, whether, you know, socially, online, email, what is the best way to connect with you to help build confidence and to learn how to, you know, improve their public speaking?
All right. Well, my website is www.clementdwyer.com. So that's my full name, last name.com, clementdwyer.com. That's my website. So you'll see some of my videos, some of the blogs that I put up. You can always email me at my first name, Clement, dot my last name, Dwyer@gmail.com. And through that, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. You can go to my website, you'll get those links. So yeah, so if anyone is interested in finding the tools and techniques that's going to help you to become a confident and a better communicator, let me know.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Clement. And we definitely are going to have to go live with you soon, for sure. We do that on Instagram every other weekend or so. And we have a hoot, okay? So we would love to have you on again and, you know, hoop it up.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Now, I was going to make a joke with Leanne, is when I heard Zola, I didn't click on Leanne. So when I voice, I'm like, snap, those two sound alike. And then I oh my goodness. You go, that's one half of, I went, that's what Lola said. Wait a minute.
Power of branding. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, at least I sound consistent throughout everything.
Yes.
But thank you again for joining us. We will be sharing more information on how to connect with the lovely Clement Dwyer on our Instagram page. Like he said before, you can find out more about what he does at www.clementdwyer.com. And we will also be linking his Instagram and his socials as well. So thank you again for a wonderful day and a wonderful evening. Thank you for joining us. Mm-hmm. As I said, I'm one of your lovely hosts, Lola.
And I'm the other half at The Hill Diva. And we are signing out with Mr. Clement Dwyer. Say bye.
Good night.
Bye.